Talofa Lava, I'm Monty Beetham, and I thank you for choosing Once a Warrior. In 29 seasons, only 33 players have played in a grand final for the club, and one of those guys is my guest today, Aaron Hiramaya. Thanks for your time, my man.
Thanks, Monty.
Whereabouts are you living and what are you doing for mahi?
I'm currently up in North Queensland, about four hours south of Townsville, a place called Mackay. So I've been up here for 5 years now after my England venture and, loving every minute of it.
Now I'm hearing that you're thinking about putting the boots on again this year. Talk to me about it.
I am, mate. Seda Marasar, he lives here also. He coached a team over here, so I think we talked about it and we might put the boots back on together this season.
Oosh, mate. Talking about boots, let's remind the fans and maybe yourself what you were like in the boots for the Warriors once upon a time.
Hiramaya with a dart from Dummingapa. He's through like a hot knife cutting through butter.
Here into open space goes Hiramaya, then kicks across field. That's a remarkable rugby league try.
Hiramaya goes. He's found some space.
Here's Hiramaya.
When you look at that footage, man, what memories come to mind?
Obviously, great memories. I've got three boys now, and they're always on YouTube and watching. They all play footy and they watch it all. So I'm regularly watching stuff like that. And it's nice to be able to sit there with the kids and reminisce.
Absolutely, man. Now, 2001 was a big year for the club, but it was also a big year for you because there was a lot of boys at Hibiscus Coast that had something to do with the Warriors, and including the coach. Talk to me about that. Blue McLennan got you over there.
Yeah, Blue McLennan. So originally Manirua Marlin Jr. And then in 2000, and like you said, 2001, him and a coach that also coached with him, Tony Benson, they handpicked a Barakar team from unknown players. He was very astute, a great tactician, and just very smart. Hibiscus Coast was a team that sort of, they come through the Shaman and all that, and they sort of took everyone by surprise. And, a team of unknowns ended up going on and, winning the Barakar.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great team. Now, part of that team, he came from South Auckland as well, from the Papatoi Panthers, Yefeka Paliasina. Did you know him before that? And then what were your memories of him then? Because he was close to being in the system then.
Did I know him once? He's the reason why I was a good tackler. I played against, obviously, with the Manirua Marlins, and he was the Papatoi Panthers, and we're the same age. So from the under sevens all the way up until, we went to Hibiscus Coast together, every other weekend I had to tackle that guy. So as you can imagine, that set me up great when I got into seniors. Nothing unusual tackling big guys, because I tell you, he was that size at 7, 8, 9, 10. So amazing guy. Still great mates with him today. Still keep in contact with him. Like I said, just the person off the field, he's an amazing dude.
Did you think that you missed the boat, bro? I mean, Feka and these boys had played a little bit for the Warriors. You didn't get the boarding pass and you headed off overseas to play in England.
I definitely didn't think I missed the boat. Maybe for the Warriors, yes, but I still chased the dream. I went from New Zealand to Australia, to England, back to New Zealand, back to England again. So, I toiled around a lot. And I stuck in there, and I didn't get my opportunity until I was 26. So, all those guys that are, toiling, don't give up.
All right, 2008, Auckland Vulcans. Now, did you come back from England to play for the Vulcans, or was it because you were home you decided to play for the Vulcans?
Yeah, exactly that, Monty. I'd come back, and I was sort of resigned to the fact that my dream had passed me. And I was working in my wife's family Italian restaurant. I wasn't playing any footy. Bernie Perinara was the coach of the Vulcans at the time, and I think they had a few injuries. Asked if I could help out, and then, you know, obviously when you're working at a pasta and pizza shop, Italian, you're eating pasta and pizza every night. I think I was up near 100 kegs. So, I helped out the last few games for the Vulcans. Yeah, so I couldn't train because I was obviously working, and drove up. The restaurant was down in Thames, so drove up to Auckland and then played the last few games for the Vulcans, which would spark a little interest from the Warriors.
The Warriors. When did you first hear that they were interested? How did the conversation go, and with who?
It was actually John Acklin. He was doing a lot of recruiting at the time. They sort of put it to me as in they offered me to come and do a pre-season with them that year. And, you know, obviously because I was playing halfback, they must have seen something. Obviously a bit overweight, working at a pizza shop. So for them it was, give the guy a pre-season. If he does well and trains hard and gets his weight down, then we'll give him the rest of the year. And then, you know, obviously for myself, given only a pre-season contract makes you work harder to be able to get 13 on the beep test, get my weight down to about 90 kilos, which is like sort of playing weight. So those were a couple of goals. You know, when someone tells you you need to get 13 on the beep test, so straight away, obviously I'm down the park every day and I'm doing the beep test. You know, first day of training, rock up and I'm like, yeah, I've got this, this is me. Done the beep test, I got 13 straight away. But the funny thing was, when we went outside, we'd done some figure eight runs.
Mm.
And it was only half the field ones, which in hindsight, they're very easy. And walks at a time, we done some, and they said, if anyone doesn't make them, we'll keep going. And obviously I was at the backs, and I couldn't do a figure eight running because I was so used to doing the beep test.
Oh.
I always remember this. It was Wade McKinnon. He was filthy. He was proper filthy. Wade, I didn't make the times, and all I could hear was this voice, and you know, the way Wade talks is not very nice words, but he's in a nice sense, he's hurry up. So I made everyone do extras because I was training the beep test.
Oh, wow.
And then when it came to doing other fitness, I was, not good. So that was my introduction to, pre-season training.
Were you always a hooker or were you a halfback?
My whole career, Monty, I was just a halfback. And then the story goes how I ended up playing hooker for the Warriors. At the time, there was like Sean Johnson coming through, you had James Maloney, Stacey Jones, Nathan Fien was a hooker halfback. We had Liam Foran, which was Kieran Foran's brother. He was the next up and coming. So I was like, oh man, I'm no chance of getting it's just like when you do the numbers, it just didn't add up. I was well down the pecking order. So I sort of saw an opportunity at nine. At the time there was Ian Henderson, who was the incumbent there, and Nathan Fien, who was switching roles between seven and nine. So I saw a little gap there, and every now and then at training, I'd jump in at nine and, do my thing. And, I think John Acklin and Ivan sort of noticed that. And, so I said, oh, have you played nine before? And I was like, nah, not really. But, as a seven, you know what you want from your nine. And then that's how the dummy half journey started. It doesn't matter where you play. You just want to play an NRL game. And that was the goal, whether it was on the bench, whether it was at prop, it didn't matter. So... Yeah. For me, it just made sense that, look, it's highly unlikely that I'm going to get a game at halfback with all these big names here. So I've got to do something different to be able to achieve that dream.
Yeah, let's just talk about that moment when your dream was realised, when you got the boarding pass to play first grade. What do you remember of that week, and who told you, and how did it go?
Yeah, I think Ivan was the one that told me, and Ivan, he's... doesn't get excited that much. It was just, for me, it was just another conversation on a Tuesday. I don't remember the exact words he used, but it's probably along the lines of, you'll be playing this week, guys. Like, you know, that's excited as he would have got. And then, it was just a good week for my obviously family, and I do know we won that day. I'm pretty sure we won. I think against West Tigers.
When you look back on your first year in grade, obviously you came from up north. First of all, the differences between up north and then being at home in Auckland and NRL club.
Major difference is being surrounded by family and friends. You know, you take it for granted when you go away. You realise how lucky you are to have all that support network back home. And it's probably evident with the Warriors during the COVID seasons when they had to base themselves in Australia. So, that was a massive, massive difference. And then just the intensity in training is just right up there.
All right, Ian Henderson, you debuted for him. He was injured. But their relationship with him?
Yeah, the relationship with Hendo was a healthy one. Healthy competition. You want to play. That's your goal. So you always try and get one up on each other. But he definitely learned a lot from Hendo. He wasn't shy to pass on knowledge and little, you know, very good at all his little intricate skills around the ruck area. So he definitely helped me out there.
2009 was your first year, but what happened in the next 2 years? Because I mean, you played 24 games and 25 games. That was huge. What was the difference, and why did you just come on and become the guy at number nine?
Through hard work, Monty. I think I was just being consistent at training. You know, I just had the right attitude, and it helped me out get the foot in the door. And then, you know, that was the easy part, getting the foot in the door, and the hard part's keeping your spot. And you know, 2010, luckily enough, I was able to play in the ANZAC Test. So 9-10 was definitely a good year for myself.
All right, Aaron, let's talk 2011. When you mentioned exciting, nothing more exciting than that year. It was huge. Okay, let's talk SJ first. Sean Johnson, the kid that he was then, what do you remember? And did you ever think he was going to blow up like he has now?
Yeah, I did think he was going to blow up like he is now. And I was lucky enough. We both used to live on the Hung Hibiscus Coast up in Whangapoa there. So we used to travel together down to training. So I shared plenty of car rides with him. And even at that young age, he had a good head on his shoulders. Very good kid. And he definitely grew as a player during that year. But you know, you got to remember he was still very young too, and still very raw. And you know, the expectation on the kid was massive. You know, that's not surprising to me, like a lot of people, that you know he's done what he's done in the game. And for him now, it's about that next step, going one further than 2011.
As 2010, another half comes to town, James Maloney. What did he bring to the team?
James Maloney, I actually just caught up with him last weekend, actually, and he's the same. He's a great guy, and I actually played with James. I didn't realise this in Australia in the lower grades from his local team. So he reminded me of that. But he's a great man. He's a massive talker, James Maloney, and he's people see him as a bit of a larrikin off the field, but when he's very smart. Very knowledgeable, you know. When things might be getting a bit hectic, he's there. He's just like, chill. Don't worry about it. We've got everything. So, definitely come to the fore during the playoff run that we had.
Some players with some huge X factor that year as well. You had a couple guys come over. A bit of a 1-2 combo from the Parramatta Eels, Fleety Matau and Krisnan Inu.
That's right. And actually. Made me feel good because when they first came over for their first preseason, that was terrible. So it made me feel good. I was like, oh yeah, rightio. I don't feel too bad. My first introduction, but their skill level and it was just unreal. For Lettys, when you want something to happen, you just get the ball to him and just give him any ball and let him do his thing and get around the ball, because more often than not. Something would happen around him.
There was a four-man rotation, prop rotation, and I don't know if we've had a four that good. Talk to me about that pack. Who were the characters? What did you like, and how good was it playing behind them?
Playing behind them is, I felt protected out there. That's one of the things. I knew what I was going to get with each of them each week. I knew their strengths. And Sammy Raps, you know, you was always going to get a quick play ball from him. So when he was running, I was 90% of the time I was running after him, because he's one of those guys that he thought he was 140 kgs. The way he ran and the way he tackled, and you know, it probably didn't help his body, but yeah, that's, you know, for Sammy. Russ was he was a character off the field, but he was a mongrel on the field, and he's one that had my back, and I knew that if Russ was next to me, then I was happy. Big Jakey Lilliman, I couldn't believe I was playing with mm-hmm. him. That was a bit of a fanboy moment for myself, and he's just his nickname says it all, Bull. So it was great to play with him. And then Benny Martellino, he's a big boy. Had a great offload. You always had to stay alive with Benny, because the ball could just come out when you thought it was dead. It wasn't dead. So when Benny had the ball, you stayed alert.
All right, brother. A big reason of success in those years was Ivan Cleary as a coach. What did you love about him?
He genuinely cares for every person in the team. He was always pull you aside for a chat, not even related to football. He took an interest in your personal life. So if you've got a coach that can bring the best out of you, make you want to play your best, then I definitely felt like I wanted to play my best for Ivan. The way you speak to some people, a blow up to one person, you can't do that to another person. And he knew that, so he knew how to approach different situations. And for me, that's what makes him great. An example for myself is one of the Island boys. He sort of took him aside, had a quiet word to him, explained to him what was wrong, and he got a better reaction out of him rather than blowing him up in front of everyone in the video session. And for me, that was, what made him the great coach.
Let's talk about that grand final. Lance Ohio actually started for you. You came off the bench that week, because I remember 2002 being 18th man. It is a crazy week, and it goes pretty fast. What do you remember of the huge occasion? Because it wasn't just one team in the grand final. There were three Warriors teams in the grand final, but it was mainly about the NRL first grade side.
Yeah, it was. And like you said, Monty, it was a great week. We had, a lot of fun, and looking back on it and in hindsight, which is a great thing, and probably were overawed by the whole week. In my opinion anyway, the week, it got the better of us. Definitely didn't play our best game of the final series, and looking back, that week sort of, I reckon it played a role in that performance on the weekend. I remember getting the big people's elbow from Georgie Rose, and actually, if it was that game was played in this era, I would have been off the field. And I think about two or three sets after that, Brett Stewart scored the first try, and I was actually a marker, and I didn't tie in. So in hindsight, I probably should have been pulled off the field. Yeah, I was definitely not knocked out, but I was stunned and a bit rattled for about 5 minutes after that. And then, but like you said, you sort of get yourself together and you push through those things. And in that instance, it sort of cost us the first try, so that could have been different. The Manly players, they're big players, really stood up in the key moments. We were always in the game. It was always close, and then we just couldn't quite switch that momentum over or convert those opportunities into points. And whereas on the flip side, they're big players, sort of big game experience, been in the grand finals before. It's sort of that experience sort of shone through the longer the game went on. So, that's the way it was. I watched it a couple of times, and I enjoy watching it.
Now, you've got sons yourself. If you put themselves in your shoes, is it better to have not played in a grand final, that way you don't lose one? Or is it better to play in a grand final and lose one, but I also know that hurts? If you can answer that for me, man.
Yeah, I remember Alvin Gutenbill saying he came in, I think, the week before we played the final, and he played in the 2002 grand final, and he wasn't happy with his performance in that final, and he never got an opportunity to play in another grand final to rectify that performance that he put in. And that always stuck with me. And after watching the game in 2011, you know, I was definitely wasn't happy with my performance personally. And then luckily myself, I was able an opportunity in 2012 when I went to play for Hull FC. We played in the Challenge Cup final against Wigan. So that opportunity to play in a massive grand final came a lot quicker than I thought it would. And although I didn't, we didn't win the game that day, I walked off that field with a performance that I was very happy with. And so that sort of put me at ease from that 2011 grand final, if that makes sense, you know what I mean?
After 2011, why did you leave? Because, I mean, two brilliant years, 25 games in 2010, 24 in 2011, but you were gone.
I was gone, mate. I got that little tap on the shoulder, you know, and that's the way it is. The club went in a different direction. You know, I was getting on. I think I was 29 at the time. I made way for Nathan Friend, so I got the tap on the shoulder, so that's just business. You know, the clubs always have a direction that they're going to go in, and you just accept it for what it is and move on to different pastures. Went over to England for Hull FC, so again, grateful for that opportunity. Spent 8 years over there, and a couple of kids over there, so that worked out well.
A grand final hooker, I want to get your thoughts on 2023 version of Wade Egan. Outstanding player. What do you like about Wade Egan?
He's the best hooker to play for the Warriors, I believe. Just his consistency, the way he engages the markers. As a former nine, I can see how he really engages defenders and it opens it up for the likes of the SJs and the back rowers. Their job becomes a lot easier, so for me, he's a massive part of the Warriors this year. If he can stay fit and healthy, we'll have a good year.
Aaron, can you sum up your time at the club in that jumper?
Amazing. It's the best 4 years that I had playing rugby league. Every kid wants to play rugby league, but to do it for your home team, definitely I'm very proud of. Always remind the boys of it, and some memories I'll cherish for a very long time.
I'm Monty Beatham. Thank you for watching. We will see you next week for another episode of Once a Warrior.
Hiramaya with a dart from Dummy Napa. He's through. Boy,